side would you like? Which side would you like?
Maybe in the middle, because you're going to start on Exponential. Oh, I'm first.
We just have to.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council Chambers. How many of you are new? This is your first time at City Council? All right. How many of you want to testify? Okay. Well, for those of you that are here to testify and are new, you'll need to be signed in, and our great council clerk, Carla, has the sign-in sheets. You'll be given 3 minutes, and you just need to give us your first and last name. No addresses. First and last name, and there's a clock on the front of that imposing piece of lumber that will count down from three. If we could have, we've got a special presentation before I gavel things in. If our special guest would please come forward, we have Jules Krentz. She is a member of the Portland Commission on Disabilities. We have Hannah Pastorius. She is a member of the Portland Commission on Disabilities. And we have Lisa Ross, who's the director of the local National Multiple Sclerosis Society chapter. And I am pleased today to proclaim today to be Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Week, and I'd like to read the proclamation, if I might. Whereas multiple sclerosis interrupts the flow of information between the brain and the body and stops people from moving, it is unpredictable, often disabling disease of the central nervous system. And whereas more than 400,000 people in the United States live with multiple sclerosis, and every hour of every day, someone is newly diagnosed. And whereas last year in Oregon, nearly $2 million was raised to find the cure for MS and develop effective treatments for the disease, as well as provide a wide range of client programs to improve the lives of individuals living with MS in our state. And whereas this investment is paying off in significant advances in treating MS, such as new medications, which could reduce or delay future disability for people with MS. And whereas we are committed to ensuring that people living with MS have the information and quality care they need to live healthy, productive, and independent lives, and we are relentlessly pursuing prevention, treatment, and cure. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, do hereby proclaim March 8th through March 14th, 2010, as Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Week, and in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this week. Congratulations. Who would like to go first?
I will.
Okay.
I will go first. Am I close enough to this here?
Yes, you are. We can hear you.
Okay, my name is Hannah Pastorius, and I'm with the Commission on Disability and also with the MS Society. I am really happy that you're acknowledging MS Awareness Week, that there are more than 7,000 individuals in Oregon and Southwest Washington who suffer with MS that we know about. A lot of people are suffering with the disease that are having problems and are being misdiagnosed. That's usually the course of the disease where things are going wrong, and they're telling you you're fine, you're good, it's stress, it's this, it's that. And a lot of times it takes a long time before people get the correct diagnosis. This part of the country is a hot spot for MS. There seem to be greater numbers of people with the disease here than in other parts of the country. The further away you get from the equator, the more incidence of MS that you see. They're also looking at the possibility of vitamin D coming from the sun, and because there's less vitamin D as you go further north, you're seeing more cases of MS being diagnosed. Now, MS is a disease of the central nervous system where if you are sick, if you are stressed, anything that gets your immune system kicked in, your immune system goes after whatever bad stuff it's supposed to go after, but that's not enough. It goes after your brain matter. It goes after your spinal cord, and it eats away at the myelin on your nerves, and that causes damage. So whenever you have the repairs of the nerves, of the brain, of the spinal column, you have plaques, hard plaque around that area, and that's what they call the sclerosis. And because you have so many damaged areas in your body, that's why they call it multiple sclerosis. So some people look fine. Other people are severely disabled. Some people, they go downhill rather quickly. Other people, very slowly. It's such a bizarre disease. Not any one person with MS has the same symptoms as the next person. Sometimes my speech can really be bad, that it's really hard to understand me. Sometimes my vision's bad. Sometimes you'll see me in a scooter whenever I'm going to be out for long periods of time. Other times you'll see me walking in a grocery store. It affects me differently at different times, whether it's a scooter day, a walker day, or a cane day. Fatigue is a really big problem. It's one of the unseen symptoms that you see, and it's one of the biggest problems and the hardest one to diagnose, the one that is least accepted whenever someone is just having too hard of a time going to work and having Social Security accept that as a disease. Jules can tell you a little bit more about the different stages of MS and what other things you can see with it.
Thank you very much.
Or not see.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
You're welcome.
MS stops movement. That's kind of our slogan. MS stops movement physically, mentally, and emotionally. Physically, some of us don't move as well. Our foot drops. We get tremors. Some fatigue, as Hannah mentioned. We get, sometimes there's cognitive issues that come into play. Not a lack of intelligence or a decline in intelligence, but more a slowing down of processing is something that can be pretty common at most stages of the disease. Not everybody gets it, just like not everybody uses a scooter and not everybody has trouble with their vision. It's very variable. Also, the time in our lives when MS hits most often is between the ages of 25 and 40. The mean diagnosis age is 34. That's the years that we're having our kids. We're at our most productive work times. We are at our most visible in society. And yet, with this illness, we are often invisible because of the symptoms that we don't see, because of the difficulty. And it's not as largely known as some other illnesses, and I think certainly deserving of attention. When I was diagnosed, I was 34. I was a single mom of an 11 and an 8-year-old and a full-time student, and also I was working full-time. This is not unusual for people when they're diagnosed. A lot of times we are just thriving and going and going and going. MS stops that in a lot of cases. Some people it doesn't. In mine it did. And, you know, my life did a 180, and I actually am very happy with where I am. But a lot of that has to do with organizations like the National MS Society and support and visibility of the disease and some of the advances that they're making in research. We've got two main research areas here, OHSU and Providence, that are doing some amazing things. So this is kind of what we're here to talk about and let people know, hey, this is important, and we can do something about it. We don't have a cure, but we can make life easier, I think.
Fantastic. Thank you. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much again for the recognition of MS Awareness Week. My name, again, is Lisa Roth, and I represent the local chapter and also someone who has been living with the disease for 6 years. So all three of us are living testimonies of the disease and also active in the community to find a cure, to provide services and support those who need it when they need it, through programs, services, education. And really, MS Awareness Week is all about getting the word out, letting people know that this disease hits this community 5 times more than anywhere else in our nation. And we need to do something about it. And the ways that people can do something about it is by being active in their community, by volunteering, by participating in one of our walk events on April 10th or April 17th in 10 communities throughout the state, by participating in our bike event, by helping spread the word about the services that we provide, our organization provides to those who need it. There's 7,000, but then when you take into effect families, friends, caregivers, and colleagues, the number is much greater. So again, we thank you so much for the acknowledgement of this week. And we've brought orange bracelets to everyone in recognition, and I'll leave them here, but just so appreciate your recognition and acknowledgement.
Well, thanks for your advocacy, your work, and it's really inspiring. So thank you for being here. Give them a round of applause, folks. Today is Wednesday, March 10th, 2010. It's 9:30. The Portland City Council is in morning session. Will please come to order. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Good. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We'll begin with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 308?
Request of Richard L. Meyer to address council regarding the mayor's responsibility to hold the Housing Authority of Portland accountable under ORS 456-110.
Mr. L. Meyer, welcome back.
My name is Richard L. Meyer. I'm a candidate for the North Portland House seat. Candidate for City Commissioner Sam Adams acknowledged that you can't make good public policy without good public data. He supported equitable distribution of public housing. City Commissioner Sam Adams twice asked HAP for statistical data, voted against a HAP nominee who opposed revealing HAP statistical data, supported Mayor Potter's announcement to gather HAP statistical data, and as mayor-elect, instructed Commissioner Fish to provide him with HAP's public housing statistical data. In every case, Sam Adams failed to obtain the data and shrugged off the rebuffs to his authority. Adams' failure to follow up on any of these efforts demonstrates his disingenuous and dishonest commitment to a public policy of equitable distribution of public housing. Mayor Adams has the singular authority to nominate persons to the HAP board. Mayor Adams has never vetted a nominee with regard to the most important public policy issue. Do they support equitable distribution or unlimited neighborhood concentration of public housing? Mayor Adams has instructed his staff not to inform Richard L. Meyer of HAP nominations, lest he embarrass the mayor with public testimony challenging the unvetted nominees. Oregon law gives singular control of HAP through the power to dismiss board members to the mayor of Portland. This power requires that the mayor of Portland, Sam Adams, monitor and hold accountable the HAP board for every policy decision and the annual spending of their $80 million budget. In this job requirement, Mayor Adams has miserably failed. Despite the fact that HAP claims 33,000 public housing clients that are defined as passing a means test, getting a government subsidy, and signing a rental agreement, Mayor Adams denies that public housing exists in Portland. This political malfeasance has consequences in North Portland, where the public housing is a major political issue. Elections are about making choices. In the North Portland House race for the May primary, the choices are clear and dramatic. Richard L. Meyer supports equitable distribution of public housing and demands public housing statistical data from HAP to discuss the issue with voters. Tina Kotek supports Mayor Adams' endorsement of the covert policy of unlimited neighborhood concentration of public housing and declines, like Adams, to press for any public housing statistical data and engage in any conversation with voters on the matter. Mayor Adams' betrayal of his oath of office and the voters of North Portland is both profound and dangerous. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor?
Sir.
We cherish the First Amendment in our country, but I would just respectfully note for the record that I fundamentally disagree with everything that Mr. Elmire just stated.
Thank you, sir. And for those of you that are visiting and observing, this is 3 minutes where anyone can sign up and say anything they want. And it's a platform, it's broadcast on TV. Can you please read the title for item number 309?
Request of Colin O'Neill to address council regarding the need for planning and policy to better manage wireless sites, cell towers in residential neighborhoods.
Hi. Welcome to City Council.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Colin O'Neill. I live in Beaumont, Wilshire, neighborhood of Northeast Portland. And I wanted to talk to everybody this morning about what's been happening in our neighborhood and what we're seeing happening in communities around the city with the issue of wireless antenna sites coming into residential streets. There's a proposal in our community to build a 60-foot wireless antenna tower to replace an existing utility pole structure on a residential street. And our community is really being galvanized by this plan, and we've come together and organized and stated as clearly as possible through all the means that we have at our disposal that we don't believe this is an acceptable location for this facility. Our Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Association recently held a special meeting on this issue, and we passed a resolution that formally opposes this proposed facility, and recently this resolution was unanimously endorsed by the Coalition of Northeast Neighbors. A copy of that resolution is included in the documents we provided this morning. As we came together, we're moms and dads. We're not activists. We're not even really organizers. We're just a bunch of people who had this forced upon us. And as we came together, we realized that we need to fight this in our community. But we also need to look at this on a much broader level, because this is really an issue that's citywide. We set up a website called respectpdx.org, and pretty quickly people from all over the city started contacting us, a group of moms and dads with full-time jobs and other things to do, and asking us, what can we do? Why is this happening on residential streets? What is the process, and how can we get involved? And we've been dealing with this for about 3 months, and it's been quite a roller coaster, but we've learned that it's a very complex issue. It's an evolving issue, and there's a lot of unsettled law. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of detail that's very, very difficult for the communities themselves to understand and manage. Now, the current guidelines that Commissioner Fritz led, I believe, has made some improvements, but I think what they've done is set up an administrative process for something that is much more complex that can be handled through this pure administrative process. It really allows the companies to set the agenda as far as where they want these things to go, and it forces the city and residents to react to the company's plans. And we think that they're in the driver's seat, and we can't be reactive. It's too complex, and it's too important to our communities. We need to be proactive, and we need to have them adapt to our priorities, not the other way around. There's a lot of issues that we believe we can take a stronger position on. Just as a couple of examples, we can build upon the priority street system, which I think is a good start, but we can really use that to truly zone the right-of-way, and we can indicate areas that are acceptable and not. We can also treat personal wireless services differently than telecommunication services, and that's indicated in the telecom bill that we submitted today. This is the start of a second wave of infrastructure for wireless services, and they are targeting our streets, our homes. These are the homes where we have block parties. These are where our children play. These don't have to be opened up to anybody to site their antennas here, and we believe it's time for a citywide master plan to address that issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Can you please read the title for council calendar item 310?
Request of Eric Winston to address council regarding cell towers and community policies.
Mr. Winston, please come forward. Welcome. Glad you're here.
So my name is Eric Winston, and I live in the Beaumont-Wilshire neighborhood. I live there with my wife and three-year-old daughter. I actually live next door to the Beaumont Wilshire Market, or the Wilshire Market where the proposed tower is slated to go into, which is a non-conforming zoned mini mart in the middle of a neighborhood on Alameda Street with a bunch of $500,000 houses, so it sticks out like a sore thumb. A little bit about me. I'm local. I'm from Monmouth Independence area. I graduated from Morgan State. I'm a CFO of a footwear company here in town in the Pearl District. I'm also an ex-Navy electronics technician with my background in radio and navigation communication system repair. Now, this tower has some immediate effects. Number one is when I look out my bedroom window, I will see that tower from my second-story window, and it'll be prominently visible. There's a noisy equipment box. It's a PPNL power pole, so they don't allow the equipment boxes like 50th and Burnside where they're attached to the pole. So that box will be along our fence line, mine, my neighbors, and other neighbors, where it's a very noisy equipment box. As you know, on 50th and Burnside, there's been a lot of noise problems with that box. It's going to dramatically affect our quality of life when I have a neighbor, Andy Frazier, who his family basically lives in their backyard and will have to listen to that thing all summer long. And also the tower will be radiating right close to my house. The other issue is also that's a non-conforming use for residential zoning. And so someone, when that mini mart's gone and we go to build condos or houses there, that box will still be there affecting someone else's property value. The tertiary effects is also property value degradation. We have a letter from Portland real estate agents and also a study out of New Zealand that says that our property values are going down because of that pole. And I don't know what we're going to do about that, but we're going to figure out something to reclaim that value if that pole goes in. There's also unknown health consequences. I have a three-year-old daughter. As part of the Telecommunication Act, I'm very well aware that we're not supposed to impede telecommunication development based on health factors, but there is unknown health consequences that need to be researched. I understand the city's policies on that and very good policies on that. And so a call to action, number one, is deny Clearwire's application for the equipment box that's supposed to go on Wilshire Market's property due to the non-conforming zoning and the length, the 20 to 25-year length of the Clearwire contract, because when that market goes away, that box will still be there. Also, I agree with Colin and respectpdx.org that we need a citywide plan for the more than 800 more clear towers coming in. And also, it's understood that if we want to fight that Telecommunication Act, it's going to cost about $2 million of lawyer time to fight it through the court system, up through the appeals system. And we would want the city to work with grassroots groups like respectpdx.org to link our groups nationwide and get that money for the city of Portland, because this is the kind of community that needs it. Thanks.
Thanks for your testimony. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Carly, can you please read the title for item number 311?
Request of Ulysha Hardiman to address council regarding respect for the city charter, Oregon, and U.S. constitutions.
Mr. Hardiman? All right, can you please read the title for item number 3112?
Request of Caitlin Johnson to address council regarding cell towers, health, and public policy.
Hi.
Good morning.
Welcome. Who's this?
This is Callie.
Hi, Callie.
This is her first experience here as well as mine. So.
She's doing great.
Good morning. My name is Caitlin Johnson. This is my daughter, Callie. She turned 2 yesterday. I also have another daughter who's 4 and a half. Her name is Nyla, and she's at preschool this morning. We live at Northeast 40th, just down the street from the proposed WiMAX site. I fully understand the Telecommunications Act that we're not supposed to, the piece about expressing health concerns, but I feel like I need to do this, and I feel like this is very important.
We'll give you a little extra time.
Okay. I'll talk fast. Okay, thank you. I'm a school psychologist, and I have taken a leave to raise our 2 girls for the past few years. As a school psychologist, I've frequently worked with children with neurological and behavioral disorders, and we now know that there are many environmental factors that impact development of these types of disorders in children. This is one of the reasons why there are others, too, that I am very intentional about the environment that I create in my home in the decisions that I make about how I want to raise our girls. We eat mostly organic food, as many, many Portlanders do. We live in a home that is free of toxic chemicals, both inside and out. And these are the choices that my husband and I have made based on what we feel is best for our family. I'm a researcher both in my professional and personal life. Whenever we have been faced with decisions to make in regards to our children's health and well-being, the first thing I always have done is go to the research, read the research, and make a decision based on the facts and what's available to us. And this is exactly what I did when I heard of Clear's plans to install a WiMAX antenna down the street from us. So for me, this is about our right to decide what kind of environment we want to raise our children in. Despite the fact that we have created the healthiest environment we can at this time for our children, we now could have constant non-ionizing radiation from the WiMAX antenna pulsating through our homes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I would also like to add that there are an additional, well, in total, there are 11 children under the age of 8 and 5 teenagers on our block alone that would also be affected. There are many studies that have been done on the relation of radio frequency radiation exposure and health risks. A few that I found particularly disturbing are, and that I'd like to share, is one study that showed that school children living near a radio location station emitting non-ionizing radiation in Latvia suffered reduced motor function, memory, and attention spans. Another was a threefold increase in the incidence of malignant tumors found after 5 years exposure in people living 400 meters from a mobile phone mast. A 2004 study found that a 400% increase in the incidence of cancer among residents living near a mobile phone tower for between 3 and 7 years. Now, this to me is very upsetting and disturbing. This is also the point where skeptics say the results are mixed. Okay, I'll talk fast. They say that they can cite studies that show no ill effect, and here's the answer for that. Swiss researchers that looked at studies across 10 years found that 33% of the solely industry-funded studies showed negative effects, but 82% of those funded by public agencies reported there were effects. In short, industry-funded research tends to show little cause for concern, yet the findings of publicly funded studies strongly suggest a need for precaution. So I don't know how much more time I have, but what's crystal clear to me is that it is not worth the risk. It's not worth the risk for me and our children, and the rest of the group that has come together to protest this.
Well, I am curious what else you had to say, if you wouldn't mind telling me.
Well, it's our understanding, based on Clearwire WiMAX installations in other cities, that if the WiMAX rollout continues here in Portland, as it has been, an antenna will be placed every 1,500 feet. This means that very soon, most neighborhoods in Portland will be facing the same situation as those of us in Beaumont-Wilshire. So my questions are, what is the plan for this WiMAX rollout? What distance is safe for these antennas to be near schools and churches and residences? What is the RF emission level of a WiMAX antenna, and how does this differ from other cell antennas? How many will be located on any given street? When Respect PDX put these questions to Clearwire representatives, we were told that the answers were proprietary information. Has anyone in the city asked these questions to Clearwire? Do you have those answers for us? And last, what I would like to ask is for everybody to attend the full signal showing on Monday, March 15th at 7:30 at the Pacific Northwest College of Art, 12th and Johnson. And I think it's a very eye-opening film. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you very much. If I might just comment and ask you a question. Have you sent that? I thought your testimony was very compelling. Could you please send a copy to our congressional delegation?
Certainly.
And because this council unanimously passed a resolution asking the federal government to look again at whether there are health impacts.
Mm-hmm.
We think that the studies need to be updated. And Congressman Wu in particular has said he will work with us on this. But I would like everyone who's concerned in the whole city of Portland watching on cable here in the audience to please contact every one of our congressional delegation to let them know that indeed the citizens of Portland support the resolution and want the Congress to do something about this. Second of all, if you could stop by my office on the way back, we've answered about 60 or more questions from the Beaumont-Wilshire neighborhood folks, and we're more than happy to do that, but I'm not sure that I have your contact information. So we worked with the community last year to make the regulations as stringent as we thought legally defensible. Mm-hmm. We're certainly looking at how they're working out and are dedicated to continuing to do that, working with the community, because we do share many of your concerns.
Well, thank you very much.
So Commissioner Fritz has as a trained medical professional, has taken up this cause, and I just want to underscore she has helped lead this city council to be one of the most assertive city.
We were the first in the nation to do the resolution.
Most assertive city council on establishing the health impacts for these issues. And that's an important step in order to be able to sort of take it further. So some of you asked for master plan or other sort of regulatory tools. We agree. We have to establish a reason for that, and there's a lot of preemptive federal law around this. So you're absolutely on the right track. And I just wanted to recognize Commissioner Fritz for her great leadership. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Saltzman had an announcement.
Yes. Carl, I don't know if you have to read Resolution 345, but I'm asking to set that over 1 week.
Yep.
I know there's a number of people here in the audience for that, and so I just wanted to get that out of the way early.
We should probably read the title.
Okay.
Yep. Item 345, declare that it is the policy of the City of Portland to defend the 2006 voter-approved reforms to the Fire and Police Disability, Retirement, and Death Benefit Plan.
Unless there are objections, or did you want to say more?
No, I just wanted to set it over 1 week.
Unless there are objections, item number 345 is continued and set over for 1 week, the 17th. So done. Consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull from the consent agenda? All right, Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard. Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have two times certain. The first one is at 9:30, so we're running late. We will try to be expeditious in making up time. Can you please read the title for time certain, item number 313?
Support the reinstatement of the Amtrak Pioneer Line.
Could we have our guests please come up this morning to speak to this issue? All right. We don't have any guests. I thought we did. Hang on just a sec.
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
That's you. Yes. I apologize. I don't have all the names. So the Portland City Council is enthusiastic. Thank you. To be able to support the efforts towards the reinstatement of the Pioneer Amtrak line. This actually marks our third council item regarding Amtrak service, first on the Pioneer, regarding the Pioneer line, so appreciate your advocacy on this. We absolutely support additional rail connections, passenger rail connections to the communities, to our neighbors to the east, and I want to thank Scott Wells and Ken Schlockmills with the Pioneer
Sketchmills.
Sketchmills. So Scott Wells and Ken Sketchmills with the Pioneer Restoration Organization, again, for your diligent grassroots effort. And I'll read the therefore be it resolved and then ask you to say a few words. Therefore be it resolved that the Portland City Council supports efforts to restore the Amtrak Pioneer service between the Pacific Northwest and the Central Rocky Mountains in Chicago. Be it further resolved that this resolution shall be brought to the attention of Portland's representatives in Congress, who are respectfully urged to act so as to give effect to this resolution. Thank you. Would you like to say a few words?
We weren't expecting to speak today.
I know that's part of, that's so part of the great thing about coming here, isn't it?
We came here in November and talked to you about this, and we both really appreciate the work you've done. I think the wording you made in your resolution is very good and effective, and we're very pleased that the City of Portland supports the restoration of this rail passenger service.
Great.
Have there been any intervening developments since you were here in November with respect to funding Amtrak? Or
Amtrak is
nothing definitely positive.
Oh, on this
yet. Line. There still needs to be work getting Congress to fund it and Amtrak to run it.
Right.
You're very welcome. Thank you. All right. Unless there's additional folks that would like to testify on item number 313.
No one signed up.
Please call the vote.
Fritz.
Mayor Adams, I appreciate you bringing this resolution. I am a strong supporter of rail of all kinds. especially this passenger rail that is historic, and I'm very glad that you brought the resolution. Aye.
Fish?
You've just set a record for a 15-minute time certain. Thanks to those who testified, and thank you, Mayor, for your leadership. Aye.
Saltzman?
Pleased to support this. Let's hope Amtrak keeps the Pioneer running. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for item number 314?
Accept report from Urban Forestry Commission.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Brian et al., if you could come forward. I have a brief opening statement. Mayor and Commissioners, the Urban Forestry Commission is presenting its 2009 annual report. Their presentation should take about 10 minutes and will include some PowerPoint slides. The report will refer to the just-released draft of the citywide tree project, the city's effort to rationalize the management of Portland's urban tree canopy. Currently, public and private rules and ordinances are, to put it politely, a bureaucratic pastiche.
What?
Pastiche.
What?
Whatever that means.
Pastiche.
That's polite. It's polite.
Who wrote these comments?
Definition, please.
There's no motion to strike, so I'll continue. As a council, we often find ourselves discussing our gray infrastructure, roads, sewer pipes, and bridges. Today, we will hear about our truly green infrastructure. Portland's urban forest is increasing in canopy, while many other cities have shown dramatic decreases. An important part of this success is the diligence and activism of Portland's Urban Forestry Commission. The annual report being presented today brings our urban forest clearly in focus and underscores our current efforts and future plans to maintain and enhance this valuable asset. In the audience, I want to recognize first from Parks and Recreation, the city's urban forester, Dave McAllister. Dave, would you please stand? Thank you. And presenting today will be Brian Krieg, the chairman of the Urban Forestry Commission and a professor at Portland State University. Excuse me. I gave you a promotion.
You did.
He's just the chairman. And Joe Peraski, who is a professor at Portland State University. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Mayor Adams, members of the commission, the council, Brian Krieg, chairman of the Urban Forestry Commission. The commission thanks you for this opportunity to report on the city's urban forest. It might be an understatement to say that Portlanders are passionate about their trees. Trees are one of the key things that define this city and its livability. In 2009, our citizens put in over 67,000 hours of volunteer work planting, pruning, and maintaining trees throughout our parks and right-of-ways. That work had a value of nearly $1 million in volunteer time. And that passion for trees is why the Urban Forestry Commission was created at the urging of Bill Nato 38 years ago. The commission currently consists of 11 citizen volunteers who during the course of 2009 collectively contributed over 1,500 hours for the betterment of Portland's tree canopy. The Forestry Commission works closely with the Urban Forestry Division of Portland Parks and Recreation. We advise the city forester, Dave McAllister, on a variety of issues, from budgetary details to program implementation to adjudicating disputes between citizens and the Forestry Division over tree removals. We also work with other bureaus such as BES, Planning, and PBOT. And we administer the Heritage Tree Program. We know that that's one that is a favorite of the council's. And the annual Bill Nato Award. The full commission meets once a month, but the committees meet as often as four times a month. Today, the Urban Forest Report provided to you has two sections to it. Exhibit A is the Forestry Commission's annual report for 2009. This is prepared by the commission and focuses primarily on our activities. Exhibit B is the implementation update on the city's Urban Forest Action Plan. This is prepared annually by city staff. The action plan was adopted by City Council in 2007. It has 63 action items. We are pleased to note that over half of the action items are now either completed or are in progress. Both parts of the report note the significant contribution by nonprofit agencies and our citizens in achieving an ambitious set of goals. The reports have a great amount of information, ranging from the establishment of five new school arboretums to the number of trees planted, to the implementation of a summer youth corps to help maintain our trees. Today, we will focus on just a few of the most key activities and issues both from last year and ones that are currently in front of our commission. In 2009, our number one issue was the citywide tree project and the code rewrite. The primary focus of the commission's time during the past year was spent working with staff on various bureaus on the citywide tree project. This once in every 25 years type of effort will have an immense impact on how we manage our urban forest in the future. The Forestry Commission gave significant input to staff and reviewed a tremendous amount of information. If nothing else, this entire process shows how integral trees are throughout the fabric of our city. We'd like to commend all of the city staff working on the project for their hard work, cooperation, and ongoing dedication on a very complex project. Our second key issue was the budget, and I have been a member of the Parks and Recreation Budget Committee for 2 years now. I and the entire commission are very aware of the city's revenue shortfalls and budget challenges. Nonetheless, we are deeply concerned about potential cuts to urban forestry. Trees are living things and do need our care. However, the expense of maintaining and expanding our urban forest pales in comparison to the substantial benefits it gives us. Our trees work very hard for us, 24/7, 365 days a year, and they deserve your support. We know that each of you is well aware of the significant environmental, health, livability, and economic benefits the urban forest provides for Portland, and each of you oversees at least one bureau or office that has a key role in the management of the urban forest. We encourage your consideration of the urban forest as a whole when making your budget decisions this year.
Public education and grassroots activism were both hallmarks of urban forestry. Since the late 1990s, the Urban Forestry Division and the Commission has had a training program designed to create a cadre of local neighborhood tree leaders. These tree stewards serve as both an information resource and a catalyst for tree-related activities in their neighborhoods. More than 170 people have completed this program. Urban forestry staff and the Education Committee of the Forestry Commission worked closely this past year to update the tree steward program and its curriculum. Instruction is provided by a combination of urban forestry staff and volunteers, including private arborists, tree-knowledgeable citizens, university faculty, utility foresters, and Urban Forestry Commission members. In 2009, we graduated 23 new tree stewards, representing 16 neighborhoods. Feedback from participants in the tree steward program continues to be overwhelmingly positive, and we look forward to a 12th year of training this fall.
Moving on to key activities for this year, our number one activity is the completion of the citywide tree project. It's imperative to finish this project this year. Significant staff and volunteer time have been committed to this project for over 2 years now. There is momentum and the need to bring it to a successful conclusion. The draft report, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, is out now. The project is now moving into its legislative phase with open houses for the public and briefings of stakeholders. And on March 23rd, the Urban Forestry Commission will join with the Portland Planning Commission to hold a joint public hearing on the project and its draft proposals. This joint hearing of the two commissions is an unprecedented move, and it is indicative of the cooperative and significant nature of this project.
Could you just say that again and say what time the hearing is and where it would be?
The hearing is on March 23rd. It will be at the planning offices on at the 1900 building. I believe it's 6 o'clock is the start time.
Thank you.
Seeing this project through to its conclusion will be the Forestry Commission's top priority for 2010. We're excited about it, and you will be hearing from us again later in the year when the proposals actually come out as to our specific recommendations on that project.
Another key issue for the coming year involves the Neighborhood Tree Steward Program. As human populations have moved from the countryside to urban areas, we've lost much of our understanding of trees, how they function as organisms, and what their health needs are. Trees are recognized as an important part of the whole sustainability equation, and we view the educational function of the Neighborhood Tree Steward Program to be an essential element of the Urban Forestry Program. In 2010, we plan to seek ways to expand our tree partnerships still further and to strengthen and expand the Tree Steward Program, such as working with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. One example of this expanded educational effort is a series of advanced special topic workshops that have been initiated and that are proving to be very popular.
Turning to long-term issues and looking beyond 2010, our number one issue is the capitalization of trees. There's a growing recognition that our green infrastructure can be just as important as our gray infrastructure. Trees in the urban forest are noted as a key factor to achieve the goals of many of Portland's major plans. These include the Climate Action Plan with Multnomah County, the Portland Watershed Management Plan, and the Portland Plan, which is under development. All of these plans rely on trees for their success. In the long run, there will need to be more funds allocated to maintaining and enhancing our urban forest if we are to achieve these goals. The Commission believes that a shift to recognizing trees as capital assets, recognizing their full value as part of the city's infrastructure, is crucial to maintaining and enhancing the urban forest and achieving many of the city's goals. This will be a paradigm shift, but one whose time is at hand. Work on capitalization will be our next thing after the citywide tree code as our major priority for future years.
In the period 1972 to 2002, Portland's urban forest canopy grew by an estimated 1.2%. Note that it took 30 years to add that 1.2%. Also, note the increasing rate in the second half of this 30-year period, the time frame in which Friends of Trees has been operating in the city of Portland. A target of 33% canopy cover has been set by the Portland plan, and that 6.7% increase over current canopy rate has important implications. If we continue expanding our urban canopy at the same rate as in the 30-year period, it will take 168 years till 2178 to reach the 33% canopy target. Obviously, if we are serious about increasing canopy cover and reaping the associated benefits, this schedule needs to change, perhaps to the rate of the second half of the 30-year period or greater. Programs such as Greater Green, Friends of Trees, and the Neighborhood Tree Stewards are essential to this effort. Our goal in the Urban Forestry Commission is to continue promoting canopy expansion and to work toward increasing the rate of expansion as well. Another issue involves the large growing trees and native species in our urban forest. The benefits of trees can be measured in dollars added to property values, in the tons of carbon sequestered, by the amount of oxygen produced, and through a variety of other quantifiable measures. In each case, the value that is received is proportional to the size of the trees. The larger the tree, the greater the return. Given the planting fashions of the past several decades, people are planting fewer large-growing or shade trees and planting more small-growing or ornamental trees. As a result, Portland is heading in the direction of becoming a city of small trees, and thereby reducing the benefits that we all receive. A major challenge of the next decade will be to promote the planting of large growing trees, particularly evergreens, where they are appropriate, thus working to reverse this small tree trend. Other important factors and decisions have an impact on urban forest health. For example, the planting of native species, again where appropriate, helps reduce maintenance, since these natives are adapted to the local environmental conditions and can survive better than the exotic species we often plant.
In conclusion, in the past two decades, people worldwide have come to understand the multiple roles that trees play in the urban environment. Additionally, people and organizations, such as the Nobel Committee, have come to recognize that tree planting and maintenance is an empowering act, and that it has importance well beyond simply putting a tree in the ground. Simply put, urban forestry is a local response to a set of global issues. The City of Portland made significant progress in meeting urban forestry goals in 2009, and we give thanks for those achievements to our many partners, the urban forestry staff, the nonprofits like Friends of Trees, many government agencies like BES and others, and most importantly, our citizens. That concludes our report. Thank you.
Discussion from Council?
I kind of missed your point, and I thought it was a significant one about what's happening with respect to smaller trees, ornamental trees, at the expense of larger trees. Am I capturing your point?
The issue is that what we're planting, what we're putting back as we remove trees, or as we put trees where there maybe hadn't been some for a long while, we're planting small trees, mm-hmm. little dogwood trees and a lot of other small species that don't get very big. So they don't create much canopy. And all the measures relate to the amount of canopy that's captured. Well, another aspect of that is the form of the tree. These very tall, narrow trees, columnar trees, don't do nearly as much as the spreading trees do because there's a lot more canopy.
And so I assume this issue is being looked at as part of the citywide tree policy discussions that you're raising?
The issue is being raised within that. I think the citywide tree policy is going to cover certain issues and a lot of the codes that we have now and organizing them in a number of things. I think this is the type of issue that points to the future that we need to be grappling with, is we're looking at new development, whether it's a public building, private buildings out there, that when we're taking trees down or we're putting in a new property to try and design areas in the city where we can put large trees in. We can put in the evergreens, which work at full capacity all year long. I think that if you were to look back, we're trying to find a way to do this, look back at satellite shots going back, say, 10 years ago, you would look in the wintertime at Portland's tree canopy, and how it looks now is going to look significantly different. I am here as a member of this commission because I really got tired of seeing infill developments wiping out fir trees out through the west slopes out here, and that there was no plantings back except for, as we would say, very small trees, a dogwood in the front yard replacing three magnificent fir trees. The air quality I watched from my house on the hillside over a 12-year period has gotten much worse, and trees are part of the answer for that, and we need to have them. But we need to have new policies to put them in place. Our trees along the streets aren't the area that we have the way in the right-of-way is usually not appropriate for really large trees. So we need to be looking for other ways to get them into the city properties. I know that the Parks and Recreation staff tries to put them in wherever they can on their properties, but there are many more, and then we need other creative solutions.
Just two quick final questions. How's our heritage tree program coming along? I haven't seen many trees nominated lately, it seems. That's one of my favorite activities, is designating heritage trees.
Mayor Adams, members of the council, yes, we know that you guys do like the Heritage Tree Program. It is actually in very good shape. They're getting ready to go out on some of their tours to look at newly nominated trees. They have a number of them in the hopper. They will be coming to you a little later in the year with some new trees to add to the collection that we have out there. And I think, well, I don't want to say too much about it, but I believe that OPB is actually doing some filming of this issue out there and is very interested in the Heritage Tree Program for one of their programs. So
it is alive and well, and
we'll
see some nominations soon.
Very soon.
Okay, my final question. ODOT's doing a major reconstruction on I-5 South, kind of near Barber Boulevard, and I noticed there's a lot of trees being cut on that slope between Barber Boulevard and I-5. Is that something we had any input in as to their...
Mayor Adams, Commissioner Salzman, the property there is state property, and our capacity to influence that is somewhat limited on that. I had a discussion yesterday with the urban forester on that. We're going to be talking with them more. There has been discussions with staff about that. The trees will be replanted up there, from what I understand on that. It is a significant loss of tree canopy, though, when you look at the sheer numbers there, and it does have concern for the commission, the Forestry Commission, and others. I think further discussion with the forester and ODOT probably would be productive.
Okay, well, if you need us to elevate the level of those discussions, I guess I'm sure Commissioner Fish, who's in charge of the urban forester, would be willing to have those conversations, and I would certainly join him in those.
We appreciate that offer, and take you up on it.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you very much for your volunteer service. Your presentation and report are both very impressive, and I know you get support from the staff in Parks, but it's very impressive that volunteers are putting together expert advice and report on this depth and breadth. So thank you very much. I particularly appreciate the performance measures in the report, and I'm interested to see that the Friends of Trees volunteer hours have decreased in the past couple of years, and at the same time, the Neighborhood Tree Liaison training program went into hibernation for a little bit. So I'm really glad to see that you're revitalizing that and renaming it as Neighborhood Steward, Tree Stewards. Very happy that you're going to be working with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Because although we've increased the funding, we also need to increase the number of volunteers. My question is on the next page in terms of challenges about the funding for the Bureau of Development Services tracking development applications. And I'm wondering, did we fix this by having some of those functions moved to the Bureau of Environmental Services recently, or is this something that we continue to need to address? I know that the Environmental Services is now taking some of the inspection responsibilities for development services. Is tree inspection part of that or not?
I believe it is. That's part of the discussions we've been having with Bureau of Development Services. Yes.
Right. So we share your concern on that, and we'll make sure that we do track that. And again, I want to mention that hearing on March 23rd because it's very important for citizens to give their input on that. And I appreciate the fact that you and the Urban Forestry Commission and the Planning Commission are holding the hearing jointly. That's very helpful.
Thank you very much for your service. Really appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen. Does anyone wish anyone signed to testify?
We have two people signed up. Please come on up. David Odom and Veronica Bernier.
David Odom is actually a member of the Urban Forestry Commission, and he is a neighborhood tree specialist at Friends of Trees. He's an ISA-certified arborist, and he's a municipal specialist. Did I get it all?
You got it all.
Welcome, please.
And I'm also a staff member at Friends of Trees, and that's in that capacity I'm here to speak in front of you this morning. So good morning, commissioners and Mayor Adams. As I've been introduced, thank you very much for that. Commissioner Fish, David Odom, and I'm here representing Friends of Trees. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to comment. During the annual report presentation by the Urban Forestry Commission, as an Urban Forestry Commissioner myself, I feel it's important to know that the city commissioners are apprised of our work. Friends of Trees is working to meet the tree canopy goals as established with the Urban Forest Action Plan. This season, we will have planted approximately 4,000 trees in 70 neighborhoods. Neighbors planting alongside neighbors, building community within the city of Portland is a fantastic component of our city, of Friends of Trees, of nonprofit to be a part of. Over 10,000 trees and shrubs have been used to restore native landscapes in the wider metro region through Friends of Trees Green Space Initiative. Through our broadening partnerships with those such as Portland General Electric, J. Frank Schmidt, Metro, the Backyard Bird Shop, the Joinery, Verde, we are expanding our programs to include neighborhoods with low tree canopy percentage and those without access to a tree park. It's very important for those to be able to look at trees, play underneath trees, have trees as their experience. Through a growing partnership with the Oregon Department of Transportation, Interstate 205 is quickly becoming a well-treed transit corridor. Importantly, and I emphasize this, for the first time in state history, this project along Interstate 205 has capitalized not only the installation of trees, but factors in their future value as well. As you are no doubt aware, trees are increasingly being discussed as municipal assets, as they should be considered, part of the infrastructure. Like I like to think, we know how many stop signs we have, we know how many miles of pipe we have, we know how many fire trucks we have, but how many trees do we have, and what is their value? It's the one municipal asset that gains value over time. Tree planting is very important and it's vital. The Bureau of Environmental Services Greater Green Initiative is actively expanding the green infrastructure. To that end, Friends of Trees planting programs directly benefit the health of our watersheds and riparian habitat through the reduction in stormwater. We also work with the City Urban Forestry Division inspectors and BES staff. Through that, we have assisted in developing the neighborhood canvassers and inspectors who go door to door signing up neighbors to plant and receive trees in their planting strips or into their yard. In closing, I would like to thank the City Commission for their time and recognizing the value of the urban forest, allocating resources to achieve attainable goals of canopy cover, and continuing to support the awareness and vital role that trees play in our society. Thank you.
Thank you for your service, David.
So can I just